Hello, friends, family, and fellow listeners. We are with you here recording on Selection Sunday, and probably what ends up being one of our most fun podcasts to record of the year. We will talk about what happened this past week in the Big Ten tournament and then preview the games coming up in the Big Dance for the teams from the Big Ten that made it. Brett, did you make it through St. Patrick's Day, St. Patrick's weekend for that matter, okay enough to have a functional podcast sesh with us today?
Oh, Steve, I absolutely did. It was a great weekend of hoops across the country. And, you know, I think, you know, given some shouts out to the smaller conference tournaments that have been wildly entertaining over the last couple of weeks, and capped it all off with a very entertaining Big Ten tournament. So I'm in a great mood. And as we know, this is March. And I'm ready to talk some brackets.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame we don't do the Fire That Guy segment anymore, because I think it would have been a first this week to have a Fire That Guy segment about a coach that goes on to earn himself a tournament bid. But that's not Big Ten related content here, so we won't talk about that. We will instead, as Brett makes faces at me because clearly he wants to talk about that, we will go ahead and jump in and get started with the tournament that was for the Big Ten Conference this week. I will say it was a fairly chalkish tournament, aside from a few things, and we're going to get to all of them, but we're going to sort of start in chronological order. But arguably the biggest game of the tournament for teams on the bubble was the last game of the day on Thursday that featured Ohio State and Iowa in what wasn't necessarily, and I mean, what didn't end up being a win in your end game, but it was definitely an elimination game for the loser. I think a lot of folks had been optimistic about Iowa's play sort of in the second half of conference season and thought they were pretty well positioned to pick up a bid with even as few as one wins in the Big Ten tournament. But they ran into the buzzsaw that was, you know, Ohio State, who finished out the year 6-2 under Jake Diebler and look well positioned to who looks well positioned to earn the head coaching job there going forward. But I mean, Brett, how disappointing was this performance if you're fans of the Iowa Hawkeyes, who I don't know that this one win would have been enough given everything that happened throughout the rest of the weekend, but this felt like a game that they were well positioned to take, but it was Ohio State that really controlled it from start to finish.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Then they, you know, they won by 12. They're up. Their biggest lead of the game was 14. Iowa never led in this game, and it really kind of was all Ohio State. And I guess correcting a point, I guess, Jake Diebler was officially given the Ohio State job earlier this weekend. So we have a Hire That Guy instead of a Fire That Guy. So congratulations to Mr. Diebler on a 5-year contract with the Buckeyes. We shall see how that goes. But, you know, I think well-deserved after this run. But, I mean, yeah, this is a game where, you know, you got a very motivated Ohio State team, a very game Ohio State team. Jameson Battle was able to, you know, put up another 20-point performance in a game where Ohio State averaged 1.2 points per possession. And for Iowa, it's one of those things where this is how Iowa loses games, right? Like, they're north of a point per possession. They missed a bunch of threes, but still shot 38% and only turned the ball over 8 times, which we had kind of harped on as an important factor. But they give up over 1.2 points per possession. They're generally kind of helpless on defense, and they don't have the firepower to sustain against a good offensive team. So that's been the rub on Iowa for years, especially when they don't have a superstar caliber player. And that was kind of how things fell for them. But yeah, it was another, you know, balanced attack, 4 double figure scores for Ohio State in a must win game. And it was, you know, at least good to see them heading in the right direction. And, you know, I think, I know we don't talk about the NIT, but I think this is a team that could benefit from a couple extra games moving into next year.
Yeah. And I think even putting Iowa's season in perspective, I think, you know, not that we're the experts on this, but I think had them picked like 13th out of 14 teams in our preview this year. You know, they had some guys take some steps up this year. You know, they had a transfer portal big guy that really worked out. They had the freshman of the year on their team. So I think even a lot to be excited about as your Iowa moving forward. But this one was a punch in the gut for them, you know, after really putting together a strong second half of the season. Moving on to Friday. So we had a couple of really entertaining games on Friday, but the one that I think we want to talk about first was the first one of the day, in which Purdue fended off a really, really feisty Michigan State team. You know, we've harped on Michigan State for their like inconsistency at times from a program that really you don't expect to be inconsistent around this time of year, but they really looked on Friday, even in the loss. And I don't think like a tournament bid was ever in doubt even before this game for them. So, you know, they were playing for seeding at this point, but you know, on really what like wasn't necessarily like a masterpiece of a basketball game stylistically, they really made things tough on Purdue. And I thought held their own as well as they could have in the loss. Did this game tell you anything really about either of these teams, not necessarily foreshadowing that what happened later in the weekend with Purdue, but what was your takeaway from the first game on Friday?
This game was physical. It was a war. There were 46 fouls called between the two teams. And, you know, I think for everything about Purdue that we've been complimentary of, I think we had yet to see them really kind of get in the mud and like really win a grinder of a game. And especially in a tournament setting, it's good to see them win games like that. You know, Edie had another really big game. He had 29 and 12 and two blocks. But the rest of their starting cast, I mean, Lance Jones had 10 points on 7 shots from the field. You know, Braden Smith got hurt, and you know, what ended up being a calf strain. But if you were watching the game live, it looked much, much worse. So you know, we're glad that he's obviously feeling healthy, even if he came back a little gimpy and like was also a questionable decision to put him back into the game, because this Purdue had basically nothing to gain from winning that game. So, but yeah, on a game where they only had two double figure scorers, and didn't shoot the ball great from three, they were still able to lock in enough on defense. And on the Michigan State end, like, they fought hard. They are capable of competing with a lot of really good teams. And I think even on the selection show, you know, the crew on CBS was talking about how they play well but don't win, and that's why they were deserving of a 9 seed. And I don't know that I necessarily would go that far, but that is kind of the MO of their season, right? Like they, you know, Tyson Walker had 15 points on pretty inefficient shooting, but still had 15 points. But they defended Purdue pretty well, and it's hard to score when against Purdue when your main way of scoring and creating offense is your guards kind of taking the ball in the lane. You know, I thought their bigs asserted themselves way better than they have been kind of throughout the year against Edie, and you got some nice contributions from Trey Holloman. So this is a team that has talent and is capable of putting it together, but hasn't quite yet. And I think that's kind of the story of their season so far.
And I think you can take that point and flip it on its head. If you want to like look at the glass half full, if you're Michigan State, they have three guys that can carry them offensively at any time. And you need that kind of firepower, you know, when you're in the tournament, right? Like, you know, Tyson Walker, for all that, you know, he didn't accomplish this year, he was still like a top five scorer in the conference, and you know, proved that he could make big shots whenever he wanted. We saw the flashes of star power out of Malik Hall, you know, at times throughout the conference season. And you know, I think when you look at AJ Haggard, despite maybe what was an underachieving season for him, you know, we know that he can make big shots at times too. And in a way, I think part of what that guard oriented like shot making allows is it allows the you know, they have so many big guys that they can run out there and just muck the game up when you need them to muck it up. And like, it's not the formula that I think Michigan State's used to, but like, I mean, if they're getting punched in a tournament game and they need a guy, you know, they need, you know, big guys to come in and change the physicality of the game, kind of like you saw here against Purdue, they can afford to do it because they have a army of them. And when they need to run and gun with their guards, they can. But again, I could not agree with you more. This is kind of a microcosm of Michigan State's season. But you know, I think also, and you know, maybe we'll use this to transition into the next thing that we want to talk about. But you know, when it comes to Purdue, like I think it's funny, right? Because the Purdue apologists have had a ton of data points in their back pocket based on Purdue's performance this season to defend them as a legit national title contender and a team that, you know, should be a shoe-in to get to the Final Four. But then every once in a while, you know, they have a game like they had on Friday, you know, and piggyback that with their loss to, you know, a Wisconsin team that came to play this weekend. And then all of a sudden, the criticism comes back that Purdue can't win a big game and that they're not good enough to meet the moment and that they cringe under pressure. I mean, I think this was this weekend was exactly the data point that all the Purdue haters needed. But for the sake of not being too negative with this next team that we want to talk about, let's talk about the Badgers, who seemingly out of nowhere, and admittedly, we, I think, previewed, or maybe more me than you, but we previewed last week that I at least thought that their draw lined up favorably for them in the sense that, you know, they were going to have a 5-12 game that they were going to easily be able to handle their opponent, which they did in defeating Maryland fairly easily. And then the matchup with Northwestern, I think, was good because they sort of play similar styles, but Northwestern's heavily injured and kind of limping to the finish line. Even though Northwestern came out punching early behind Boo Booey, Wisconsin was able to fend them off. And then Wisconsin, you know, comes up with a really, really impressive, hard-fought victory in overtime against Purdue, where they sort of looked like the Wisconsin of the first half of the year, riding behind AJ Storr, behind great productivity out of their big guys, behind Chucky Hepburn doing it all on both sides of the court, and Klesmet making a big shot at the end of the game to get the win. Brett, what did you see? It's both out of the Badgers and out of the Boilermakers this weekend that you think is relevant as we think about these teams the rest of the way here.
Yeah, so for Wisconsin, I think it started, I mean, the game against Maryland was always going to be one where you thought that their offense could really take hold. I don't know that anybody saw them shooting 64% from three on 25 attempts, including making their first six to get up just big in the first half. I mean, with 8 minutes left in the second half, they were doubling up Maryland at 78-36. I don't even think that the biggest Badger homer in the world saw that coming against a pretty stalwart defense for Maryland. But it you know, everything continued. And I think something key to remember is that they played the Northwestern game without Chucky Hepburn, who got hurt down the stretch in the Maryland game. And so the point guard duties kind of went between Klesmet, John Blackwell, and Kamari McGee. So, you know, kind of being able to adapt to losing their defensive leader, you know, the guy that runs the show for them was pretty impressive, especially with, you know, Boo Booey kind of went nuclear in the first half. I believe he had 18 points kind of well before halftime. I mean, he was just getting open and hitting pretty much everything. So, you know, I think the theme for this week for Wisconsin was kind of taking punches and then being able to repunch, which is not something we've seen, you know, throughout the course of the season. I think, you know, the offense has been kind of gotten a little lackadaisical after teams have kind of punched them. And this game, it didn't really happen. I mean, the Purdue game was really back and forth too. I mean, the largest lead for either team in that game was six, and Purdue led by six 4 minutes into the game. So it was really back and forth, concluding with, you know, Chucky Hepburn's layup to send it to overtime. And then Max Klesmet's, you know, shot to win it by one in overtime. And they were able to really overcome a bunch of foul trouble. I think, you know, you can go on Twitter and see everybody's critiques of the refs from that game, and warranted or not, you know, the Badgers still committed 28 fouls, including all three of their big guys. So Nolan Winter, Stephen Kral, and Tyler Wall fouled out, and they were able to rally and win this game. I think that just shows a grit. Not that, you know, Purdue is lacking by any means, but I think it shows that the Wisconsin that played Marquette and won, you know, that had back-to-back wins against SMU and Virginia, and, you know, really got out to that 5-0 start in conference play, is you know, maybe I don't, it's a 4-game sample is a little early to say if it's back, but they're playing with as much momentum and swagger as they have all year, and heading into the tournament is the right time to do that. And I think on the flip side with Purdue, like they had opportunities. They were forced into a bunch of the same shots that they'd hit in the first 2 games against Wisconsin. And sometimes those mid-range jumpers don't fall. I'm still not exactly sure why Braden Smith played. Again, I think it's, you know, if your focus is really on the tournament, and everyone knows obviously Purdue's bona fide, they are a number one seed. I think it's more about keeping your guys healthy. But, you know, I think it was a game where they didn't shoot particularly well, especially from three, and neither did the Badgers. But, you know, Purdue left a lot of points on the line, and just it was one of those games that came down to a coin flip, basically. And that's not the end of the world, I think, at all for Purdue.
Yeah. So first off, I agree with you on Wisconsin. I think the only thing I have to add is I think you should also give credit to the coaching staff for keeping their whole team together throughout their struggles throughout the second half of the year. You know, they have a veteran team, right? We talk about the importance of roster continuity a lot on the show. And not that like that continuity wasn't there during the losing streak, but whatever funk they were in, they've shaken it off, and, you know, they're arguably the hottest team in the conference heading into March. And that is exactly what you want. You know, that is what we talk about every year, who's hot heading into the tournament. And I think Wisconsin definitely is. And I think of Purdue, you know, should the motivation have been there for them for this? Like, no, they didn't need to prove anything about like how good they were this year. But, you know, I think the only thing that you just worry about with them is, you know, if they get into a close game, and I'm not saying they're going to get into another close game with 16 seed again, because like that was just so anomalous from last year that I don't think it's going to happen. But like, even in the 1-8 or 1-9 game, if they get into a close game and they get tight again like this, or they get, you know, a big guy that can hang with Edie, or if they end up having to guard more, you know, athletic players on the other end, they may be in a little bit more trouble. And I think then all the doubts creep back in, and, you know, that's what this team has to overcome more than anything. It's a mental burden with this program and this team. And, you know, we're going to be there for the next, you know, week to 3 weeks to see if they have enough mental fortitude to come to overcome it. I do not think it's X's and O's with this team at this point. It is all mental. Now, finally, we've gone 18 minutes so far, and we've yet to talk about the Big Ten tournament champions. So I will apologize to the Illini for that, but they stole the show this weekend. They were down in every game that they won. You know, they had to literally fend off a pesky Ohio State team who was, you know, fighting for a puncher's shot at the tournament, and arguably gave Illinois the best fight of anyone this weekend. They were, you know, they then, you know, this was a Nebraska team that was surging that they took on Saturday, overcame a double digit deficit to, you know, really take control of the game in the last 7 to 10 minutes and emerge comfortably victorious. And then really took all that Wisconsin could give them. And Illinois just, you know, had more at the end. You know, with Terrence Shannon, it was a ho-hum superstar like performance this weekend. But, you know, I think what we saw, and honestly what this has been building towards for really the last, I don't know, 5 to 8 weeks with this Illinois team, is just that this is what they're going to be under Brad Underwood. You know, they can hang 90 on you any night. You know, when the threes are falling and they're getting out and running, it's really hard for anyone that isn't explosive offensively to hang with them. Ohio State gave them their, you know, gave them their best shot in terms of slowing them down defensively this weekend. But, you know, I mean, Brett, what did you think overall of Illinois' performance and really, like, what do you think about just their ceiling from here on out in the big dance?
I mean, it's definitely a high ceiling. I don't know anyone that would be excited about playing the Illini right now. But I thought something that was very interesting, and, you know, I think they know that, I think the championship game against Wisconsin, you know, they know that they are a bad matchup for Wisconsin, so they can really force the issue with and push the ball in transition with Shannon. You know, Shannon had 28, 40 and 34 across the three games they played. That's insane. That's just incredible levels of efficiency. And even more interesting, he had 34 against Wisconsin on 15 shots. He was 15 of 17 from the line. Domask was 8 for 11 and 9 of 10 from the line for 26 points. And then Danger had 9 points after that. So, you know, not that they have to be overly reliant on those two guys, but when they know that, you know, they can get running with Shannon and then have Domask, you know, do his post-up game and hit. He was hitting again against Wisconsin. It was just tough shot after tough shot. That baseline fadeaway was really working for him in the game today and against some pretty solid defense. But, you know, I think it is interesting that they've really had those guys going in terms of shot attempts and points and usage overall. I think that's how they're winning games. And, you know, I think they're an interesting matchup for just about everybody in the conference, with Purdue being kind of the one team that can really take advantage given the size of Zach Edey. And, you know, we'll talk about what their tournament ceiling looks like later. But I mean, they're playing really, really good basketball right now. And it would not shock me to see them make an extended stay in the tournament.
I don't really, you know what more to say other than, you know, what we've just said. But I think huge credit to Brad Underwood. I know he's taken a lot of heat from Illinois fans, you know, and us over the last couple of years. But I think what he's done with this team this year has been nothing short of incredible. I think he deserves all the praise in the world for it. He's piling up Big Ten accolades, you know, in each year. You know, I think despite, you know, all the criticism out there of sort of the way he coaches, I know he needs to do it in March, and I think that's the next hill that he has to climb. But I mean, for all that they went through this year with Terrence Shannon not being able to be with them and really just kind of coming in expecting to take a step back this year. I mean, Terrence Shannon looks like one of the best players in the country this year. Damas looks like a whale of a number two. Coleman Hawkins is sort of more controlled than he's ever been. And Gurrier, Rogers, Goody, Harmon, they've got a great supporting cast too that knows their role, but also has the freedom to, you know, get shots up, get to the rim. And it stylistically, you know, the rest of the Big Ten clearly has not been ready for this. And, you know, the one question remains is just, you know, when they get out against more athletic teams in the tournament, you know, will some of that advantage gets neutralized or not? And I think that'll be a good discussion point coming up here in a couple minutes. Before we preview the tournament, as always, it is now time for a word from our sponsors.
Yes. And so, yes, we would like to thank Brewbags Coffee Company for their support and sponsoring this podcast for the entire season. And again, you know, we've only got a couple of these left this season, so I wanted to let you know that you can rediscover your ritual with Brewbags Coffee Company and their single serving flavored cold brew pouches. So whether you're looking for an easy way to make cold brew, you're trying to just to save time in your busy morning, or you want to have coffee your way while you're on the road, brew bags are so easy that you can brew them in your sleep, and they are so delicious that you will want to wake up. We can still celebrate brew bags by and get 10% off and free shipping on your first order that by using code LAUNCH10, that's LAUNCH10, at brewbagscoffee.com. So just do that at checkout and you'll get 10% off and free shipping on your first order. Thanks again to brew bags for sponsoring this podcast.
All right, on to the preview. So we've got two Big Ten teams in action on the Thursday of the NCAA tournament. And in fact, the first game of the first round will feature the Michigan State Spartans taking on who got in as a 9 seed. They will take on the 8 seeded Mississippi State Bulldogs in the 11:15 a.m. tip on Thursday. Brett, what do you know about Mississippi State and how the Spartans will hold up in this matchup?
Well, I know that the Mississippi State comes from Mississippi, so that's one way to, you know, get things going. But in all seriousness, Mississippi State is coached by Chris Johns, who longtime college basketball fans may remember from those New Mexico State teams that were always terrifying to play against in the tournament. Should have gotten a couple wins, and notably that Auburn game from a few years back. But he's an excellent coach. Mississippi State is very physical defensively. They rank 20th right now in KenPom's defense. So this is going to be, you know, with Michigan State as 8 right now, it's going to be a knockdown, drag out fight that I feel like we get in a lot of these 8-9 games. You know, I think that it's going to be one that's won kind of in the trenches. Mississippi State does not. I'm going to have to really work on, you know, keeping Michigan State versus Mississippi State straight. But Mississippi State does not shoot the three ball well. They also do not shoot it that often, but they shoot it a little bit more frequently than Michigan State. So they're Mississippi State is currently 247th in the country in threes, 3-point percentage. So, but they are 6th in the country at 3-point defense. So interesting little matchup to see how Tom Izzo schemes his offense, whether it's going to be trying to get Haggard and Walker in space into the paint. You know, they've got Mississippi State has kind of, you know, a big man, Tolu Smith, that is going to be a focal point, both offensively and defensively. So he's very high usage. He's big. And so that could be trouble for the whatever rotation of big guys Izzo decides to use at this point. You know, we saw Cooper and Kohler do okay against Edie, and Sissoko got more run than we're used to seeing. But this will be a physical rock fight that you know, it could only take one team hitting a couple threes to really separate themselves in this game.
Sounds like a trip to the dentist for me. And as you guys know, no one likes going to the dentist. And yeah, a potentially rough game for the fans to start out the tournament. But like you said, I actually think this sets up well for, you know, Michigan State to be, you know, relevant and competitive in. The winner of this game will likely end up taking on North Carolina, which I do not think Michigan State matches up well against. I think if you are a Michigan State fan and you have dreams of a long tournament run for this team, you know, you're really going to need one of your, I think, big guys to get hot on defense, and you're going to need really all three of their offensive superstars to be clicking at once, I think, to have any shot at fending off North Carolina. Second and final game of the day, featuring a Big Ten team, Pitt's Morehead State against Illinois, also in the afternoon window on Thursday. Illinois gets rewarded with a 3 seed for winning the Big Ten. You know, Morehead State has sort of, you know, they've been far and away the best team in the Ohio Valley throughout the season, coming in well above any of the other teams in that conference in the net. And they actually had a lot of experience against other teams in the Big Ten, even in their non-conference this year. They played Purdue and lost to them. They played Penn State and lost to them. They played Indiana and lost to them. I don't know that Illinois should necessarily have any issues with this game. Should they win, they take on the winner of Duquesne and BYU. You know, I think it's a fairly favorable draw for them to at least get to the Sweet 16. You know, after that, I think who knows. But like we just talked about with Illinois, I mean, they're one of the hottest teams in the country, well-deserved 3 seed. They've had trouble getting out of the first weekend, really every year under Brad Underwood. But I think this is probably the year that they make it through. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, like you said, not a terrible draw, but honestly, like, you know, they'd be unwise to look past Morehead State, you know, at that second round. The Eagles are, you know, they took Indiana to the buzzer at home. Granted, they also got blown out by Purdue, Penn State, and Alabama. So, you know, but this team is experienced, and they have, you know, kind of a decently sized guard and wing rotation. They don't have a lot of interior size. So, you know, this is a game where Danger could really make an impact if Illinois decides to go big. You know, Coleman Hawkins could do pretty well. Domask will be, you know, around. And I doubt that they have anybody athletic enough to stay in front of Terrence Shannon. But, you know, the Morehead State's 35th in the country in effective field goal percentage, and they're 9th in the country in effective field goal percentage defense. So they're not slouches by any means. I mean, granted, their metrics are definitely propped up a bit by you know, the just some of the awful teams they played in the OVC. But this is a team that, you know, they can definitely make their shots. They're not slouches defensively. And they have, you know, they have a little bit of size. So it could end up being a little closer than you want to see if you're an Illinois fan. But again, no real reason that they should lose this game. And then BYU, I think a team that can give Illinois trouble is not necessarily one that has the athletic. I mean, well, obviously a team that's as athletic as Illinois is going to give them trouble, but that's very hard to find. But a team with elite shot making that keeps Illinois out of the transition game, out of the long rebounds, and makes them operate in the half court is going to be dangerous. And BYU has the 11th best offense in the country, 23rd in effective field goal percentage, and they are no slouches defensively, ranking inside the top 50 on defense. So they shoot a lot of threes. 41% of their points come from threes. So it's Illinois. I think we've talked that, you know, Illinois' half court defense has been subpar to poor for the last, you know, month of the season. And while their offense obviously is clicking at every level, you know, a team like BYU can really get hot against subpar half court defense. So if they can, you know, control the pace of the game and limit Illinois' transition opportunities, which again is much easier said than done, Illinois could be in for more of a fight than they would have anticipated in the second round.
All right, moving on to Friday. So the first of four games pits 9-seeded Northwestern against 8-seeded Florida Atlantic. This game, I feel like, turns into a battle of wills, right? And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, contrasting styles, I think. But, you know, to me, this game is all about, does Northwestern control the pace, slow it down, dominate on defense, and slow down what really is a super high-powered Florida Atlantic offense. Now, like, look, FAU, they sort of come, like, I don't know that you necessarily need to, like, question their resume per se this year, but, you know, they've been kind of all over the place, right? You know, they obviously had the, you know, the run to the Final Four last year, and they've got a high powered offense, and, you know, want to get up and down and run with anyone. But now they're not going to be, like, surprising anyone. And, you know, even coming in off of a upset to Temple in the semifinals of the conference tournament, I don't know. I mean, you know, we talked about Northwestern and how they're sort of limited the finish line here, but this to me strikes me as one where if they can assert themselves defensively and control the pace, that will really give FAU problems, and they might be able to win this game. What are your thoughts on this matchup for the Wildcats?
Yeah, I mean, all these 8-9 games are kind of coin flips. I mean, I think people forget even FAU in their 8-9 game last year won on a buzzer beater. So we were this close to that game, you know, that run not happening, which is, you know, the magic of March, but also makes you kind of realize some more important things with context. I mean, I think FAU was drastically overseeded based on kind of that run last year. I mean, they have losses to Bryant, Florida Gulf Coast, and Charlotte, and then lost to Temple, who, I mean, shout out to Temple for finally playing better with a pulse after they were involved in a gambling investigation. But still, no excuses for some of their losses. And yeah, it's hard with when you're the team with the target on your back all year, as FAU was kind of coming into the season. And they beat Illinois, they beat Arizona, so they have the bona fides. But I think the consistency has been a little bit of a problem. But what I think is a bigger problem for Northwestern is a 7-foot-1 man by the name of Vlad Golden, Florida Atlantic center. A real bruiser inside, and, you know, someone that it would be, I mean, he's 84th in the country in offensive rating. So he's been a very efficient player. He attacks the boards with ferocity, very high offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding rates, and really helps FAU get a bunch of these second chance points. So I think that there's that to deal with. And the latest news on Matthew Nicholson is that he's very much up in the air for the tournament. And will, like Chris Collins has said, that he will likely play in small spurts, if at all. So, you know, it's going to fall on Luke Hunger and Blake Preston to really just muck things up in the middle and not let Golden, you know, give this team second chances. I do think that, you know, Bowie and Martinelli and Langborg and Barnheiser kind of have the size and athleticism to give Jonnell Davis and Elijah Martin trouble just on the on offense. I think they will. Northwestern will continue to muck it up. It will be interesting to see how they're reffed, because they really like kind of being physical on defense. And so if they pick up a couple quick ticky-tack fouls, that could change things. But I think on the other side, you know, Florida Atlantic's defense is outside the top 100. And I do not think that they're going to have trouble staying in front of Bowie. And it's, you know, Bowie was made for games like this, right? Like, he's made for the big stage. He's done it before. He will do it again. And I think this game comes down to the last handful of possessions. I could easily see, you know, Bowie, like you said, the battle of wills, just him willing this team to a victory and really, you know, cementing his legacy. But they are going to have their work cut out for them on the defensive end, stopping two very athletic guards and Golden. So I'm really looking forward to this game just from a perspective of watching good basketball. But I honestly can't tell you how I would pick it right now. I think it's much too close to call. But I guess, like, the big depth would hurt Northwestern more than it would help.
All right. And then in the third 8-9 game to feature a Big Ten team, we've got Texas A&M taking on Nebraska a little bit after that Northwestern FAU game. I think in contrasting the upside of Michigan State and Northwestern's tournament prospects, we've been talking about Nebraska as a team that could sneak up on people. And I think getting the draw in Houston's in the bracket with Houston as the one seed, you know, I think, you know, this sets up for one where, you know, I think Nebraska of those three teams probably has the best chance to get out of the first weekend. Now, you know, this matchup with Texas A&M, you know, I feel like it's going to be an interesting one, right? Like, Texas A&M, so their best player is Wade Taylor, who's averaging about 19 a game. This Texas A&M team has sort of gone through their own sort of roller coaster of their own over the last couple of months. So they went on a 5-game losing streak in the month of February that included like a loss to Vanderbilt and a 25-point loss to Alabama. They then turned around and went on a 5-game winning streak before dropping their last game to Florida in the SEC tournament. But so this team's kind of been up and down, and, you know, teams have been up. Nebraska's finished out the year really, really well. Although, you know, we talked about it, it wasn't necessarily against the biggest gauntlet of the schedule. But aside from Illinois, they're the most explosive offensive team in the Big Ten. They can run with anyone, which I think, you know, you'd rather have a team like that than a team that's more defense oriented like Northwestern in the tournament. Kind of like you just mentioned, this 8-9 game feels like a coin flip, but, you know, I don't know. I think there's a world where, like, if Nebraska draws Houston and they get hot, especially with Houston not at full strength, this feels like one where they could potentially make their way to the Sweet 16. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I actually really don't hate this draw for Nebraska for most of the reasons you just mentioned. So with Texas A&M, the name of the game is offensive rebounding. They lead the country. They rebound 42% of their own misses. That's insane. That's a crazy statistic. So, you know, the names, like, in addition to Wade Taylor, who's kind of a slept on guard that is really an elite college player. You know, you've got Henry Coleman and Anderson Garcia, who, you know, they're 6'7 and 6'8, but Garcia is 15th in the country at offensive rebound percentage. And Coleman is ranked as well in the 200s. So, you know, they have another guy, Solomon Washington, and all these guys are undersized bigs, but they play hard as hell. You know, it's kind of that Buzz Williams team feel where just everyone's going to play manically hard. He'll be on the court sweating through his shirt, and it's just a whole vibe with this Texas A&M team. But, you know, I think, and this is where Nebraska, with that kind of three big lineup that we've seen them deploy, really has the ability to put the game away just by rebounding misses, because Texas A&M is not an efficient offensive team. If you're just looking at field goal percentage, they are efficient because they generate so many second chances. They only shoot 28% from three on the season. They're horrible. And that kind of plays into Nebraska's strengths, where you're going to be able to hide Tominaga on somebody that can't shoot. And, you know, as long as Mast and Gary and Williams and Alec are able to corral misses, and they should, because they'll have the size advantage. If you can eliminate giving Texas A&M second chance points, then your odds for winning go way up. And they're not elite at defending the three either. They're 183rd in opposing 3-point percentage. So there's a recipe for Nebraska to win the game just by controlling the defensive glass and hitting some shots. And I think, you know, that the game could be theirs. And then you mentioned Houston. I think, you know, obviously Jamal Shedd will and the rest of Houston will totally muck things up on defense. They're one of the best coach teams in the country. Losing Tugler hurts. So, you know, Mass could find himself with some more opportunities, but they won't make anything easy. But Nebraska's shown the ability to score on basically anybody this year. And I would give them more than a puncher's chance in a game, provided they can hold up on defense and just really kind of focus on shutting down Shedd and LJ Cryer, who are kind of the engine for a Houston team that has struggled to score at some points this year.
Shifting gears from all of the 8 and 9 seeds in the conference to the one number one seed. So the next team to take the court in the late slate on Friday will be the Purdue Boilermakers. As the one seed, they head to Indianapolis, very close to their campus. And they will start by taking on either the winner of Grambling and Montana State. And assuming they avoid a repeat of what happened last year, they will then take on the winner of TCU or Utah State after that. You know, I think all labels and mental barriers that Purdue has to overcome to shed the label as a choker in March. You know, I think TCU is things are not pretty with that team on offense, even though they make things really, really tough for you and physical on the defensive end. I don't know that they have enough firepower to hang with Purdue on offense. And I think Utah State, you know, the thing that strikes me, I know the Mountain West was sort of a gauntlet this year, but Utah State seems like the least battle-tested of any of the teams out there. They have a, you know, they have a good enough net to be in the tournament, obviously, as an at-large bid, but they really didn't do anything special outside of conference to battle test them at the beginning of the year. And I just don't know that they've got the bruises to hang with Edie and co. This feels like kind of like with Illinois. I mean, I know you sort of push back on this a little bit, but this feels like fairly comfortable if you're Purdue to get out of this, especially given that it's going to be home and, you know, the crowd should be heavily in their favor. But how do you see Purdue's draw here, at least to get to the Sweet 16?
I think it's the draw is not bad. And I think, like you said, Utah State has not really been tested outside of the Mountain West, which, to be fair, very good conference. You know, I will not be disrespecting the Mountain West here. I think their teams are vastly underseeded. But I think the very interesting thing is, you know, Utah State scores 55% of its points inside, like as two pointers, and they run through great Osabor, who's a really, really interesting player, but is also only a 6'8 center who doesn't shoot. So, you know, he's going to draw Edie, and because he's not a threat from the outside. He's obviously been a super efficient offensive player this year. You know, with good offensive rating, he's very high usage. They run a lot of their stuff through him, and he's a ferocious rebounder, but he's 6'8. 250, and their other big guy is 7'2", 220. So I think that because Utah State also already puts such an emphasis on denying the 3-point line, they're third in the country in 3-point defense or opposing 3-point, you know, percentage. So they clearly make an effort to shut that down. And we've seen Purdue's guards, when the 3-pointers are taken away, a la the first couple of games against Wisconsin, the guards are able to get into space. And assuming Braden Smith is good to go, you know, him and Lawyer and Jones will be able, are comfortable taking and making a bunch of those, you know, mid-range jumpers. And if Edie can establish post position, they'll be able to get entry passes to him basically all night. So I think Utah State would be, you know, definitely a good team, but they're not great shooting the ball and score so many of their points inside that I'm a little worried that for their sake, that they wouldn't really be able to score against this Purdue team. And TCU, you kind of covered, like, really kind of mucks things up. They play, they do play quickly, but are very tenacious defensively. So, you know, they're really physical on that end. They force a lot of turnovers. So, you know, when Purdue has lost, Braden Smith has turned the ball over a bunch. So something to watch. And they shoot the ball relatively well. So it's not out of the question that they win this game. They've got experienced, a lot of experienced seniors. You know, Jameer Nelson Jr. is a name, which, as an aside, makes me feel super old that Jameer Nelson's kid is now a senior in college. But, you know, Jamie Dixon's a good coach. They've got a lot of guys that have a lot of experience, and they will definitely be a tough out. But it is a game that Purdue should and could, or could and should win.
All right. And then finally, we will end the preview by talking about the Wisconsin Badgers, who tip off as one of the last games of the weekend late on Friday. They're rewarded with their performance this weekend as a 5 seed, and their matchup will be against James Madison, you know, which was a 30 win team this year that made headlines at the beginning of the year, defeating Michigan State, I believe they were actually ranked in the top 25 at one point this year. And on the other side of that, first round set there is Vermont and Duke. So, that game I think will be interesting, in its own right, but, you know, so Wisconsin sitting there in sort of what's a popular, you know, upset pick as a 12 over a 5, but, you know, Wisconsin playing about as well as anyone in the Big Ten right now. How do you see their matchup and their overall draw this weekend to potentially get out of the region and get themselves to the Sweet 16?
I think it's a really interesting matchup. I mean, and again, like everything else, you know, it requires some nuance and some context. Like, James Madison obviously started the season with the win against what was then a top five Michigan State team on the road. Impressive win. But since then, they have played one top 100 KenPom team, and that was Appalachian State, and they lost both of those games. So I think James Madison's won 31 games. It's an impressive season. They held serve very well throughout the Sun Belt tournament. And they actually played a common opponent. So they played Arkansas State, who Wisconsin beat the first game of the season as well. That being said, I just, you know, they've obviously played very well, but it's against some teams that are not very good. And I think the most interesting thing and the biggest issue is that their size is pretty lacking. Their starting center is 6'9". He's going to have to deal with Steven Crowell, who will have, you know, 4 inches and, you know, 30 some odd pounds on him, give or take. I think that's right. Yeah, about 30 pounds on him. So this is a game where, especially early on in the season, Wisconsin was able to just thrive in the post. Crowell has the capability to be very efficient and wall too around the post, especially against smaller opponents. And, you know, James Madison really sells out on defending the three as well. They are second in the country in 3-point defense. And, you know, Wisconsin found ways to win this weekend without shooting particularly well from three besides the Maryland game, especially that Purdue game. So, you know, they have been able to efficiently get to the free throw line and make sure that there are other ways to score points. So I think as long as Wisconsin keeps its cool and doesn't get into the habit of jacking bad threes, they should be in pretty good shape. I mean, Terrence Edwards is the name to know. And Noah Friedel are the guys for James Madison. They score a lot. They're, you know, efficient scorers, and they're both pretty high usage. So Terrence Edwards specifically draws a lot of fouls. So, and has a pretty high free throw rate. So that's also something to watch. But I think that this is a game where, you know, Wisconsin is going to be the trendy upset pick, but I feel like a lot of the time that doesn't always work out. So if Wisconsin is able to just feed the post and attack the rim, which, you know, Greg Gard has shown that he's totally willing to do against an undersized opponent, and they don't lose track of, you know, the shooters. This should be a game that Wisconsin can win comfortably. And I like the Duke. I like the Duke matchup. I think like Duke will have the two most explosive players on the court in Proctor and McCain. But I think the Filipowski Crowell battle should be pretty fun to watch. I think it's a high level of offensive talent. And, you know, I think at this point, you know, that game is kind of a toss up as a 4-5 game. But Duke's been inconsistent this year and has a couple tough losses. So, you know, anything is possible. But I think that game could also come down to the final few possessions.
I think that's the perfect way to end the podcast. Anything is possible. This is the best time of the year. We've got 6 Big Ten teams all with, you know, different kind of missions ahead of them. But it should be fun to see how the conference fares in this tournament, all the way from the top at Purdue to the three teams down at the bottom, all in 8-9 games here coming up later this week. We appreciate you guys sticking with us through a longer show than normal. Was a fun conference tournament. Will even be a more fun NCAA tournament as we tip things off very shortly here on Tuesday with the play-in games. Thanks again, and we'll be with you next week. Take care.